I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. My guest today is the woman who's in charge of making sure Baltimore City tax dollars are not spent frivolously or illegally. Isabel Mercedes Cumming was appointed last February as the Inspector General of Baltimore City, and earlier this month, voters overwhelmingly supported a resolution removing her office from under the purview of the mayor. What will the Inspector General's newfound independence mean for that office and for the prospects of ridding city government of waste and fraud? The office of Inspector General was vacant for more than a year before Isabel Mercedes Cumming was appointed. She is credited with re-energizing efforts to combat fraud, and she is calling on citizens to help her in her work, ferreting out fraud in Charm City. Baltimore's Inspector General joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a really good Thanksgiving holiday. I know a lot of folks had 4 days off, and other folks, especially those who work in retail, were back at it Thursday afternoon or Thursday morning in even some cases. So whatever your situation was, I hope it was a good one. So during the recent election season, which ended earlier this month, current office holders and wannabe office holders often cited waste, fraud, and abuse as the trifecta that they would address if elected, a promise that was often followed by a pledge to fund new or existing programs with the massive savings that citizens would enjoy when the waste was ferreted out. My guest today is in charge of identifying and exposing wasteful spending in the city of Baltimore. As of a couple of years ago, there were nearly 14,000 people employed by the city. Isabel Mercedes Cumming is one of them. She was appointed to be the city's Inspector General in late January of this year, taking charge of an office that had been left vacant since September of 2016. Since then, she has uncovered problems in the city's pension system, the Human Resources Department, and the Health Department, among others. In the election earlier this month, voters overwhelmingly approved a measure that would take the office of Inspector General out from under the purview of the mayor and make it completely independent. Isabel Mercedes Cumming joins me in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well to find out about what the Inspector General does and how you might be able to help her in her job. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Inspector General, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
So take us back to when you started late January of this year. What did you find? This is an office that, as I mentioned, had been vacant for more than a year. What was the circumstances that you inherited?
Well, when I arrived, it was vacant for about 18 months. So there wasn't a lot of direction. And basically, the start of what I did was to really develop firm policies and procedures because I came from an inspector general's office. So this was already part of what I did. And then it was just evaluating what we had, really trying to boost up our hotlines because that's where any inspector general that's worth their salt, that's where the difference is going to be made. The difference is going to be made from the people. The people empower me. So I really wanted to get out, let people know there was a hotline. And sure enough, and that happened very quickly. We went from, we only had 74 total complaints in the 7 months prior, and we jumped up to, we jumped up to 95 complaints, and right now we're at 142 hotline complaints just from July 1.
Mm-hmm.
So I get out there, I talk to all new employees, we make sure that people know about our hotline. Every 3 weeks we put out our hotline, City of Baltimore. We tell people this is how you stop waste, fraud, and abuse. We put out the hotline number, which is 443-984-3476, and I'm really trying to get the people to realize we are here, and it's really making a difference.
Give me that number again, because I have an 800 number.
Okay,
for the
I have that too.
Okay, so it's 443-984
3476.
And do most of your complaints, most of your tips come from the hotline, and are they given to you anonymously? How does it work?
The hotline is a very valuable part of our complaints that come in. Like I said, we've had over 140. Right now we have 50 active investigations. So one-third of the tips we get end up going forward to an investigation stage. It really does make a difference. You can definitely be anonymous. However, it does help us if we have a way of reaching back to you. You know, for instance, on Google, anybody can form an email. So if you don't want us to know your name, if you could just make an email so that we can write back to you if we had additional questions on your complaint. Because, you know, sometimes people see things, it's not the way it looks, and we'd like to let people know what we found if we can.
So it doesn't affect your initial assessment mm-hmm. of the complaint if the person making the complaint wants to remain anonymous?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Because right now, Baltimore City doesn't have a real strong whistleblower program, and that's really important to me. And it's also really important to the council people that I've talked to. I know right now, I believe it's Ryan Dorsey and Zeke Cohen are trying to help start a real whistleblower program. And when I was back where I used to be, which is the Washington Metropolitan Area Transportation Authority, which is really just the metro system in Washington, D.C., we started a vibrant whistleblower program so that we were protecting the people that came to us. And that is critical to me because I don't want anyone to ever be retaliated by coming to the OIG.
And what are the elements of a vibrant whistleblower program?
The fact that that if you do come in front of, if you have a legitimate, real complaint, that we would notify, not necessarily your supervisor, because sometimes that's who you may be complaining about, but above them to put people on notice that you can't do anything to this particular employee unless you let human resources in the OIG know why you're doing it. So it is definitely a layer of protection for the citizen that came forward, or, I mean, the employee that came forward. It also would we'd have to be careful that people don't use us, like they know that they're going to be fired. So they say, oh, I'm going to go to the OIG and try to get protection. We also have that, too. So we actually have steps ensure that you're not using the office per se.
There was a report by the ABLE Foundation that was released in November of 2017. That's a month or so before you were announced mm-hmm. as the new Inspector General. And again, you started your job at the very end of January of this year. This was co-authored by your predecessor, mm-hmm. Robert Pierre, as well as George Nielsen, who's the former city solicitor. And they mentioned that during the 12 years of this program, this was started by Martin O'Malley back in 2005.
Correct.
Four different IGs have served the city, three different mayors.
Correct.
So that's pretty steep turnover. Your term has been determined to be 6 years, is that right?
That's correct.
And so what has the effect of all of that turnover been that preceded the fact that there was nobody in the position at all for the 18 months prior to your starting?
I think it's had a big effect on it in the fact that also I actually had Inspector General experience, and I'm actually a certified Inspector General. And I think at the time, I know that David McClintock, who ended up becoming the Inspector General of New Orleans, he was very effective. And then since then, just the world of Inspector Generals is growing all the time. It's a huge thing in Washington, D.C., because every federal agency has one. And it's a huge thing, believe it or not, in Florida, because almost all the governments in Florida have Inspector Generals. In other areas, it's just becoming, it's growing into its own. So this way, I've been able to take what I learned through my experiences. Like, for instance, when I came to in Washington, there was only one agent. When I left, we had 14. We did over 200 investigations.
These are folks investigating the metro system.
Exactly,
in D.C.
Right. Mm-hmm. So my background is such that I'm able to go into a unit and to make it a division and make it effective. And that's what I'm hoping to do here in Baltimore.
What's your understanding of the circumstances under which your predecessor was asked to resign? He was reported in the Baltimore Brew back in December of 2017. Again, that's the month your appointment was announced by Mark Reuter, who's a reporter for the Baltimore Brew, that Kimberly Morton, who at that point was the deputy chief of staff for the then outgoing mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, this before Mr. Pierre was dismissed or asked to resign while Mayor Rawlings Blake was still in office before Catherine Pugh became the mayor, that they were looking into a man named Jerome Mullen, who was the chief information officer and head of the mayor's office of information technology. And Ms. Morton evidently wanted that investigation to stop. Mr. Pierre said no, he wasn't going to stop, and he was obliged to resign. That's the kind of thing that citizens hear of and say, this is crazy. I mean, what's the point of having an inspector general if that person is not able to act independently? But when you came on, your office remained under the purview of the mayor's office. It's part of the executive branch of the city government. Could that situation, first of all, is that your understanding of the situation with the person who preceded you in the job, you know, a year and a half before you were there? Number one. And number two, is that a situation that could repeat itself given the current circumstances?
I actually don't know the entire details. I've heard so many different variations. I don't even want to talk about it, because unless I know facts of something, I don't want to speak about it.
That's fair enough.
As far as going forward, what I had been told was my predecessor did actually meet with the mayor once a week. I've never met with the mayor. I don't meet with the mayor. So from the very beginning, I wanted to make my office more independent. So I've tried to make it that way. Nobody has ever pressured me to do anything so far. And good luck doing it, if anybody knows me very well. I really have tried to make this office stand on a very firm foundation. And I mean, I now have 12 incredible people working. There's only one person left from when I first started. It's just a very different office.
So the office is turned over virtually completely. Yeah, yeah. And then what is the effect? What do you assume the impact of this referendum will be, which was overwhelmingly voted on? 85% or something of voters said yes to the idea of creating an independent office of the Inspector General. So it will no longer be under the executive branch. It will no longer be under the purview of the mayor. When does that go into effect, and what do you expect the impact of that decision to be?
It goes into effect December 6th. It was 85.7% of the vote was for making the office independent, which is a very humbling mandate, and I thank the people for that. I think the difference will be that I will continue to do what we've been doing, and we've really moved forward. Since March, we have actually issued 12 reports. We have made impacts in almost every different division. I can go through the list, but looking at it, we did DOT, DPW.
It's the Department of Transportation.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Department of Transportation, Public Works, the Municipal Telephone, the Retirement Savings Plan, the Baltimore Police Department, the Baltimore Retirement System, the Mayor's Office of Human Services. So I've looked at everybody. I mean, you said that about the Executive Department, but I've looked at the Mayor's Office too. I mean,
who as of December 6th, okay, then, who do you report to? Who has oversight of your office?
The oversight of my office is a panel. It's a panel of, it's going to be people that were selected by, three people get to pick a person, and the people that get to pick are the mayor, the council president, and the comptroller. In addition,
so it's the board of estimates.
Yeah, basically. And in addition, the two deans of the law schools, so the University of Maryland and the University of Baltimore. And they're the group that if I ever commit a misconduct or if there's an issue, that it has to go to that group and they have to make a determination. And in the future, when there is a new inspector general, hopefully in 2025, that is the group that will be formed again to pick it and to vet it and to do all those type of things. So it will be independent.
And the 6-year terms will have no term limits, right, as I understand it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So each, you will be reappointed if you apply for the job
again
in 6 years.
Yeah.
And will this panel be the one that decides yes you should be reappointed or no you should not and we should find somebody else?
I would think so. I according to the law, it's the panel that makes all decisions concerning the appointment, mm-hmm. removal.
And you look into things that are not just financial. I understand, for example, the Department of Human Resources, you investigated that department and found that there was a sort of hostile work environment. There were supervisors who were demeaning and belittling employees, that kind of stuff. So you're looking into not just waste of money or fraudulent approbation of money, but you're looking into things other than that. Can you give us a general sense of that?
A lot of time, I do believe it's very important in government to try to stay in your lane. When there's no lane, for instance, if it's such a conflict for the people to investigate themselves, for instance, if you're looking at the Department of Human Resources and that the issue is a human resources and there's nobody else to investigate them, or when we had the police department, there was a leak in there, and you can't investigate yourself. So many times I am, and I always, with what I do, I've been people's last chance, the last hope, whatever. And I take that incredibly seriously, that, you know, we are the one that can, because I have subpoena power, and I can look into things that other people might not be able to.
Isabel Mercedes Cumming is the Inspector General for the City of Baltimore. To report suspected fraud, you may call the Inspector General's fraud hotline, 443-984-3476. That's 443-984-3476. And we will post that number on the WIPR website, wipr.org/midday. You can also talk to Inspector Cumming this afternoon here on Midday when we come back from a break. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWIPR. And you can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow, we are in the final weeks of open enrollment for health insurance on the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. So we're going to check in with the executive director of the exchange, that's Michelle Eberly, as well as Vincent DeMarco. He's with the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. And we'll see how enrollment is going so far, and we'll get a sense of where healthcare is headed here in Maryland and beyond. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. Last day for enrolling in the ACA plan here in Maryland is the 15th of December. If you've just joined us today, my guest is the Baltimore City Inspector General, Isabel Mercedes Cumming. If you know of or suspect a city employee who is committing fraud, the fraud hotline for the Office of Inspector General is 443-984-3476. And again, we will have that number on our website, wipr.org/midday. You can also drop an email to oig@baltimorecity.gov. So if you want to register your complaint via email, oig@baltimorecity.gov. And you can check out the oig.baltimorecity.gov website as well for more information. If you have a question or comment for the Inspector General today, you can give us a call at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can drop us a tweet @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me on Twitter as well, @TomHallWIPR. And again, we are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Madam Inspector General, let's go to the phones. We have a phone call from Angela in Mount Vernon. Angela, welcome to Midday with Isabel Mercedes Cumming.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Cumming. My name is Angela, and just to give you a little bit of my information, I'm a social worker. I'm out of work. I'm legally blind, and I've had two transplants. So that's a little bit of what I'm dealing with. I live in a community or in a housing complex that's subsidized. So my question for you is, what are your plans for housing authority and HUD oversight? I'm not even sure if that's in your jurisdiction of obligations or oversight. There are some grievous mismanagement issues when it comes to some of our subsidized housing complexes and the management companies that both manage subsidized housing and unsubsidized housing, funneling some of their, or channeling some of their funds through, from their subsidized housing to their strictly for-profit housing. Unfortunately, I have, and actually a coalition of residents with whom I reside, have been in contact with the Housing Authority, with HUD, with the Health Department, because there are some serious issues here at my development. I'm not going to name who it is, but we have been, there's retaliation here. So a lot of residents, some elders, also people who are like myself who deal with disabilities, are in fear of doing anything.
All right.
And
well, thank
I'm sure
you.
This is not isolated.
Yeah, thank you, Angela, for that call. And you've got a lot on your plate, so good luck to that. But Inspector General Cumming, when it comes to the housing department, is that as well under the purview of your office?
Yes. Hi, Angela. How are you? Thank you very much for calling. Yes, the housing area is something that we do look into. There's actually two divisions of the housing area. And so what I would need to do is we'd be happy to have you come in and talk to us about the exact what's happening to you, because with our hotline, when people call or write in, we have someone call them back within 48 hours. So you're leaving a message or you're writing an email, but one of the things that is most important to me is that people get back to people. So we would have someone call you back within 48 hours and either to set up a meeting or to go to you. So, because it does sound like it might be difficult for you to get out, but and then I could know the details of the case, because I mean, it really is impossible for me to give even advice till I know what we're dealing with.
Now, back in 2009, there was a specific inspector general for the housing department.
Correct.
In particular, that person was looking into perhaps fraudulent use of Section 8 housing vouchers and those funds. But that program was discontinued, so that's been rolled into your office.
Parts of it have been rolled into my office, and parts of it, HUD has inspector generals. I mean, we actually work with other agencies. Whoever can do the best job, I mean, I've learned that a long time ago. If someone can do it better, I will absolutely turn it over to. But we also might turn something over, but we write back and we find out what happened. I don't like when things go into like the perpetual government black hole. We want people to be accountable for what happens, and that is very important for my hotline complaints.
Now, you mentioned, and of course it makes sense to everybody, that individual departments and agencies really are not best equipped to police themselves.
Mm-hmm.
However, don't most departments in the city have procedures, have processes in place to avoid even having to get you involved in the first place? I mean, aren't there checks and balances? Aren't there regulations and rules about spending money and purchase orders and that kind of thing that are meant to make sure that things are always done with integrity?
Oh, they're there. Whether people are actually doing it is the issue. And many times people are actually in the departments and they know the rules and they know that people aren't following them. And that's when they reach out to us. And even with one of the more recent ones we did, which was the health department, you know, people reached out to us and said they weren't following the rules. There might have been rules, but just spending was out of control.
And you heard from people within the health department?
Yes.
Or were there people from outside the health department?
There were people both.
This had to do with people from the health department in one particular division, I guess the chronic disease prevention division, and they were attending conferences that perhaps they didn't need to attend, or they were spending extra days there and billing the city and that kind of thing, as well as they purchased all these knickknacks and
tchotchkes,
you know, pens and right. stuff like that. And there were boxes of them, you know, sitting in storage. So you heard about that from someone within the health department, and then you investigated and found that that fraud, the dollar amount you put on that was, what, $178,000. I mean, it was a big chunk of change.
That's correct.
And so the health department's procedures then were in place, but it was just a matter of people in that division not following those procedures.
And we find that a lot. I mean, there are procedures put in place, but through the years, people, the one thing I you know, if someone asks what I don't like about hearing the most is that we've always done it that way, okay? That doesn't mean it's the right way to do it. And just because people have done things a certain way, that doesn't mean it's the most fiscally responsible way. It doesn't mean it's even the right way. And so that's what we're looking to find.
And in the case of this particular instance with the health department, this was money that was collected from fines that were assessed against landlords who had lead, who had not followed the right procedures for lead abatement. Right. So this is they're getting fined. So it's not like tax dollars specifically, but it's fines that came into the health department. And there seemed to have been a misunderstanding among some of the people in the health department about what those fines are supposed to be used for. They seemed to think that they had the authority to use those particular that particular pot of money, the money that came in from fines for lead abatement, for purposes that they saw fit to use, you know, within the department. In other words, it didn't have to go into the general fund of the city. And there are these special funds, according to Ian Duncan of the Baltimore Sun, $117 million in the city government budget for special funds. Some of those are grants, and some of those are fees and fines that are assessed for various reasons.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, why are they designated as so-called special funds, and are they, in fact, restricted? Are those funds restricted in any particular way and in a uniform way across the board?
Well, that's one of the things we're going to be looking into. I have both an investigations unit and a evaluations unit. One does more people, the other does more processes. So the processes of these special funds, that's an upcoming case that we are doing, because it's a lot of money.
Sure.
And I, as a Baltimore City resident and taxpayer, it concerns me too.
Let's go back to the phones to Rachel in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Isabel Mercedes Cumming. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
So what's on your mind, Rachel?
I wanted to ask Ms. Cumming, and first of all, I'm proud to say I was one of the 85% of voters who thought this was an excellent way to tamp down on some of the things that go on in this provincial town. But I wanted to ask you about the confidentiality of the calls to the 443 number. I happen to know that Baltimore City's phone service has caller ID, so that even if you're calling the City Hall operator, your name appears on the readout on their phones. So I'm just wondering how you get around that to make these calls.
So in other words, how do you stay anonymous?
Confidential.
Right. How do you stay anonymous if the city has caller ID and can identify who's making the call?
The way it's done in my office is that everybody that calls the hotline actually gets a recording, and it's me. And so then it goes into, so every morning we are checking all the recordings that we received, and then we can determine from people if they leave a message, if they want confidentiality, or if we can reach back to them. But many times we will just get a situation, and so my investigators then go into what we call, like we have on our computer, we just have something that's called OIG Hotline. And so then we listen to all the calls through that, and then we will just, if someone did leave a number and wants us to call them back, we will do that. If not, we'll just have a situation, and we'll look into that to determine if it's a really valid situation. But we very much take people's confidentiality It's one of the things that I really look out for.
So there may be some people who know who the person is, but that information isn't going to be widely disseminated.
It won't be.
Yeah. You mentioned when you came in, and thanks for that call, Rachel.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel.
I appreciate it. When you began working at the end of January, you talked about wanting to increase the budget, increase the number of staff that you have. The budget has gone up slightly, about $40,000 or so from 2016. That's according to your current report for 2018. Who will then approve and allocate money for the office? And do you expect now that the office will be working under this different set of exigencies that it will you will in fact get more funding and be able to expand the office?
That would be on my wish list, absolutely. Right now, we're going to have to present a brand new budget because things are changing because of the independence issue. At the current time, we have what's known as memorandums of understanding, and we have that with, for instance, DPW, DOT, the fire and police. And so they basically give us the money for a person. And now with the independence, we're going to try to get so that we have our own pot of money that goes to the OIG. Because the more independent we can be, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
So right now, the people taking a look at the police and fire are people who are employed by the police and fire department?
No.
So when you say you have people at
DPW... They gave us the money.
Oh, they gave you the money.
So they gave us the PIN number.
Okay.
So that works much better. So I have people that I have more specialized into DPW. Though my agents that do, like, for instance, DPW, they could also help on other cases.
Yeah, but if you work only with the Department of Public Works, you really get to know the department. You get to know what's unusual. You get to know what things. So you want people to specialize.
It helps a lot. And you can see my face or my deputy's faces, but very rarely will anyone ever see my agents' faces. They have to be able to blend with any group to go undercover to do that type of thing. So they're a very diverse group, and they're a very skilled group. And so that also makes a huge difference. I've really tried to make, and I've been blessed that my group has become so much more diverse. I mean, we went from 20% diverse to now over 65% diverse in the office of the Inspector General. Baltimore City is 67% diverse. So we really have to be representative of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, has helped make us so much more effective as well.
Do you, I think a lot of citizens think, well, when it comes to waste, fraud, and abuse, they think immediately almost of the police department and overtime, right? Yeah. And that seems to be like the low-hanging fruit of waste and fraud. I mean, for years now, the highest paid employees in the city mm-hmm. have been police officers who work enormous amounts of overtime. So overtime is a big issue. When the contract was just recently negotiated, it will be a big issue for the incoming police chief, whoever that is. Joel Fitzgerald has been nominated, and we'll see how that nomination goes.
Yeah.
But when it comes to police and their own oversight of overtime and your office and your oversight of their overtime, how do those two situations interact?
We haven't interacted yet, I can tell you that. I think we will in the future. I basically follow the money. So money is what I look into. At the present moment, there's actually an Office of Inspector General within the police department. There's also internal affairs in the police department. That was brought on by Commissioner D'Souza. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? We do know that I will be continuing, and I would look forward to having the opportunity to work with the police department in following certain monies and what happened. Has not happened yet.
So that's not been a major focus of your office to date, but you expect that it would be.
Correct.
I mean, and that's the proper place for it rather than in the Internal Affairs Division or in the Inspector General of the Police Department itself. Is this one of these instances where policing your own department is just, forgive the pun, is not appropriate?
It's difficult. And I would do it if I was asked to do it. That's, you know, like I said earlier, staying in your lane is also very important. I mean, in just since March, 12 different reports, investigations. So, I mean, we are very busy. I currently have 50 active investigations going on right now. And we're to the point we have pending cases. So we are, you know, we have to prioritize. Please understand the police department is incredibly important. The police department, the schools, those type of things. But till we become the independent unit, there's only so much that I could
do. So you would actually have to be asked by somebody to say, look into the police overtime situation.
Well, right now, I believe there's so many other people looking into it. I don't know
if anybody. It could be duplicative.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, sometimes things become almost, and it's like that in the world of fraud. You know, what becomes the hot fraud? Mortgage fraud, procurement fraud, what type of fraud? Elder fraud. I mean, right now, you know, I don't want to be duplicative of anybody. We're trying to make our own path.
I got to admit, I don't think I've ever thought of something as being the hot fraud of the year. You know,
my life is
like
fraud.
The waiter, what's the fraud du jour?
I love fraud.
Isabel Mercedes Cumming heads the Office of Inspector General for the City of Baltimore. We will have more with the Inspector General when we come back from a break, and we'll take some more of your phone calls and emails. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Before we take a quick break, on Mondays here on our program, it's our practice to read the names of people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and their friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 278 people in our city have lost their lives to violence. Baltimore police released the names of three people who were murdered in the city in the previous week. They are Danya Hollybrook, age 23, Antoine Carter, age 37, and Daniel Williams, age 37. Last week, people reported, or the police rather, reported three victims of homicide in our city. They are Jermaine Johnson, age 38, Nakia Pearson, age 26, and Kason Williams. He was 28 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And good afternoon. Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today is the Inspector General for the City of Baltimore, Isabel Mercedes Cumming. A report by the ABLE Foundation last year noted the rocky road that the Office of Inspector General has traveled since it was created by Mayor Martin O'Malley back in 2005. As of last year, four different inspectors general have served under three different mayors. Before Isabel Mercedes Cumming began last January 29th, the office was vacant for about a year and a half. Baltimore voters overwhelmingly supported the question that appeared on the ballot earlier this month, making the Office of Inspector General independent of the mayor and granting the Inspector General subpoena powers. Her purview includes oversight of all city offices and departments. The fraud alert hotline for the Office of Inspector General is 443-984-3476. That's 443-984-3476. You can also drop an email to the Office of Inspector General, that address oig@baltimorecity.gov, and we'll have all of that listed on the WYPR website. If you'd like to speak with Inspector General Cumming today here on Midday, our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. You can find me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go back to the phones to Cindy in Locust Point. Cindy, welcome to Midday with Isabel Mercedes Cumming. Cindy, you there?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Great. I was just thinking that an essential tool for the success of the IG's office and also for empowering employees would be the existence of a quality whistleblower policy. I was wondering if one does exist, and if so, how recently was it reviewed? And if it does exist, how is that communicated to staff?
All right, thanks. We talked about this a little earlier in the program. So, again, a whistleblower program, there are paradigms for this. There are examples of this around the country, right? They exist. And how hard will it be for Baltimore to develop one?
I don't think it's going to be that hard. It's going to be a lot up to our city council, and I've already had two of whom, Ryan Dorsey and Zeke Cohen, reach out to me wanting to develop a strong whistleblower policy here in Baltimore City. We were able to do that where I last came from, and the policy that I developed was so effective that the Department of Labor came and actually used ours as the model. So I believe we can develop a strong program here in Baltimore City, and I agree completely with you, Cindy. It's critical.
You looked into some problems at the employee retirement system just last month, in October of this year. The chairman of the board of Baltimore's employee retirement system was removed. He's a man named Jerome Sanders. He had a business associate, a guy named Elliot Powell, whom he had owned properties with and had done business with for some 30 years. They'd been in business together all this time, yet he, Mr. Sanders, hired Mr. Powell to work in this office of the employee retirement system. This is different than an investigation you made into the pension system, right? This is a whole different
retirement
deal.
Savings plan, RSP.
Yeah. So it was alleged that Mr. Powell had this job that paid more than $150,000 a year, and he never came to work, or he hardly ever came to work. But this went on for months and months and months. How is it that somebody can be on the payroll, not show up to work, and that's not, you know, detected, identified, and fixed within weeks? Why does it take so long for that situation, which is clearly fraudulent, to be resolved?
Because of the Maryland Public Information Act, I can only talk about what's on the public synopsis. But in general, I can tell you that in that case, we actually received a hotline complaint, and we actually started our investigation. Once we started an investigation, it only took about 6 weeks for a report to come out. And that's why people letting us know that situations, sometimes people think that nothing can be done. That's wrong. I mean, something can be done, and you can help make the change. And so in that case, that's a perfect example. You know, change happened because people spoke out and let us know that there was a situation going on. And then as a result of that, we were able to go forward. And that's what happens in most of our cases. People let us know that something, and a lot of times, you know, that is difficult. Someone else called up and wanted to know if you could be anonymous and about the caller ID. Well, we do not record any caller ID numbers. If you choose to remain anonymous, those are not used in our case tracking system. Because we developed, that was one thing that was not good when I started here. There was no case tracking system that was good. That was one of the first things I did, was implement a really strong case tracking system. So we know where the complaints are coming from, and we know where the big hot issues are in the city.
Okay, so that's a clarification of something we were talking about earlier. If you call and you wish to remain anonymous, your number isn't even recorded. So that goes out of the record.
Yes.
But when it comes to something like Mr. Sanders and Mr. Powell in the employment retirement system, once you expose this fraudulent activity, who holds them accountable? Would your office be the office that would perhaps pursue criminal or civil charges against these guys? How are they held accountable?
That's really an excellent question. The way our system works is we get the complaints, we do the investigation, and then we have to stay within our lane. We do not make recommendations as to termination or anything like that. We outline the facts. And then it goes to the person who is the supervisor, whether it could be all the way up to the mayor, or if it's in the legislative side, whoever. We report that, and we also make sure the city solicitor gets it. And then it's management's responsibility to determine what happens. It's then my responsibility to issue a public synopsis and to let people know what we did. And there's where sometimes the frustration can lie because, you know, we will do a 25-page report and I can only, as because of the laws that we have, and they're very strong here in Maryland, I can only release the part that, you know, has no personnel issues. I can't talk about, you know, people names, because I can be held personally and criminally liable for releasing that type of information. So that is very different. But as an investigation is going, I work with the state's attorney, the state prosecutor, the FBI. I work with all the different agencies. If there's a way we can do the case criminally, we'll do it. Because we want to really send a strong message and let people know that, you know, Baltimore is trying to make a real difference.
Yeah, of course, the information that I'm using to discuss this particular case is in the public record. It was published in the Baltimore Sun. It was reported by Ian Duncan, and so it's out there. I mean, and there's no reason to believe that Mr. Duncan's reporting is in error in any way. But it's just people want to know not only about exposing it, but also holding people accountable for it.
Well, in that case, neither one works for Baltimore City anymore.
Right, right.
And that's pretty accountable.
But one would think that that would be the least of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that would be the least of it. And perhaps each of them owes the city some money when it comes to sort of, you know,
and
there good.
And there again, that would be I can't talk about like ongoing cases or that type of thing.
You investigated a former person who was a housing investigator for Baltimore Housing. Mm-hmm. He was in charge of busting people for dumping trash illegally in alleys and stuff. And he was using computer records that the city has to find out information about his estranged wife. So again, it's not just money. Sometimes
right.
it's just misuse of authority
abuse.
And abuse.
Correct.
When that kind of thing happens, is it your experience in that case or in other cases like it that, in fact, the department starts clamping down, starts paying more attention, starts understanding the potential for abuse of authority? I mean, have you seen any palpable results in terms of the procedures and the way these departments are functioning?
Absolutely. I've noticed as time goes on, more and more people being very responsive. More and more people, once they realize that the Office of Inspector General is looking at something, things start changing. And that's what we want. We want people to realize there's somebody watching you, and we're watching our money.
Speaking of money, we just have a few seconds left, but let me ask you what your ideal budget would be. I mean, how many people do you have currently on your staff? How many people do you think you need on your staff to do your job effectively?
I currently have 13 people on my staff. I think the office would work the best if we had 20. I mean, at WMATA, where we had 13,000 employees, that's in Washington, the OIG's office was 36 people. I can do the job effectively with what I have, but I could do it more effectively.
And do you have a sense from the city council that there's going to be support for beefing up the resources that you have?
I haven't really approached that issue yet, but I can say that everybody has been very favorable to us, both the city council, you know, the mayor, everybody has just let us do our job. And that's where we were able to be successful.
Isabel Mercedes Cumming, she is the Inspector General for the City of Baltimore, to report suspected waste, fraud, or abuse in our city. The Fraud Alert Hotline, 443-984-3476. We'll also have the email address and the website listed on our website, wypr.org/Midday. Thank you, Ms. Cumming.
Thank
it's nice
so
to see
much.
You.
It was a pleasure.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to check in with the Executive Director of the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, as well as Vincent DeMarco of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Open enrollment under the ACA continues through the 15th of December. That's in about 3 weeks. We're going to talk about the ACA in Maryland on Midday tomorrow. We want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Here and Now is coming up next after a break for news at the top of the hour. On behalf of the entire Midday team, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.